Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number regarding the issue I raised in the promo with Louise an hour ago about a number of parents contacted us about a photograph on the front page of the Irish Times which pictures four primary school children, girls, who have lost a match. I won't even give any more details. And a number of people were upset by the photograph. We've been on to Sportsfile, and Sportsfile, who took the photograph, very reputable organisation, they say that when you're playing at that level, that the permission is already assumed, is already given. And I'll tell you why, because another parent has sent us in, when she saw the photograph, she looked up, and it's on the front page of the Irish Times, so it's pretty, it's for primary school children who are deeply, deeply upset. But this is the document a lot of parents signed at the beginning of the year. On some occasions, e.g. a child winning a competition or a team playing in a tournament, or a photograph of junior infants, the local national newspaper may wish to publish a photograph with the accompanying children's names. Now, the children's names are not on this photograph, but they are, I think they would be identifiable to their friends and buddies and family. The local national newspaper may wish to publish a photograph with the accompanying children's names by signing the consent form related to this, i.e. this is the consent form, the consent form you signed at the beginning of the year. The parents are stroke guardians of the child are giving permission for their child to be named, I presume the assumption is photographed, in this scenario. Now, unless parents of these four young girls, gorgeous young girls, beautiful primary school students, are great sports people, unless they specifically didn't give permission or opted out from that form, which I think most parents just sign at the beginning of the year. The photograph, according to Sportsfile, is, and the Irish Times, I presume, is totally and absolutely acceptable. Now, let's go to Pass the Parcel with Fastway. Rosemary Malloy. Rosemary, good afternoon. Yes.
Hello, Joe.
Begin the story, please.
The story starts last week with a delivery from Fastway. Basically, I had ordered something online nearly a month ago, and I got an email to say it was on its way, it's going to be delivered. And then I got an email from the company saying it's delivered. So a package arrived here.
Okay.
And I opened it, and it was delivered by Fastway. When I opened it, it wasn't what I had ordered. It actually was cable ties and electrical stuff. So I tried to contact Fastway, and nobody was picking up. So I kind of put it aside. I was busy doing other bits and pieces. And it really kicked off then.
Okay, Rosemary, the line isn't great. We're going to have to put you on. I'll try and get you up on WhatsApp in a sec. So you hold firm there. By the way, so I can get, well, as I say, Sportsfile say at the beginning of the year, all parents, and then all parents, I presume, of children who are going to be in competitions. Now, it does, in this one that a parent sent in to us, it says on some occasions, e.g., a child winning a competition, our team playing in a tournament. But this photograph on the front page of the Irish Times today is four children losing a competition and their distress. But I presume the assumption is that it's the same. And the assumption is if the parents sign the form at the beginning of the year, this came up because of school websites, and it's almost a pro forma form, if you pardon the double use of the same word. And parents sign it, and if they sign it, they are giving permission for their children, and they are children in this case, to be, if necessary, and most people on a joyous occasion love being on the front page of the Gory Guardian or their local paper, and I'm sure on a joyous occasion they love being on the front page of the Irish Times. If you win the Senior Cup in rugby, you're invariably on the front page of the Irish towns, be it Clongowes or Belvedere or Blackrock. But this occasion is one, the children, this is what they upset our caller earlier, the children are very, very young, and two, they look very, very distressed. And is that acceptable? And that's the argument. And while I have a second to announce as well, that obviously, unfortunately, we're not at Bloom this year, but we will be back out on the road in August. And on August the 2nd, that's the Friday of the Bank Holiday weekend. In other words, the Friday of the June Bank Holiday weekend is tomorrow. The Friday of the next Bank Holiday weekend, we will be in the beautiful Dolman Hotel. There, just slightly on the, it used to be on the outskirts of Carlow, but the way Carlow is growing, it's now in the centre of Carlow. We will be in the fantastic Dolman Hotel in Carlow. A funny Friday with Frank Ford and June Rogers and Declan Callis and Paddy O'Callaghan, all the crew, and you're all very, very welcome at the height of summer. And we will be here throughout the summer. And just to remind people, we did it a few weeks ago, about scams when you go on holidays. Will you please bring the Liveline number with you, please? The Liveline email, joe@rte.ie. And I know if you are scammed, and I'm thinking, I know about the online scams, and we do them and we try and warn people again and again and again. But apparently there's a lot of other pickpocketing scams, three-card trickster scams, three-ball trickster scams, whatever they call themselves, on the go at the minute. So please, if you're caught, which I hope you aren't, the only good thing that come out of it is to, that can come out of it is to warn other people. Back to Rosemary. Rosemary, good afternoon again.
Yes, Joe. Yes,
it's Joe, it's a complicated story to begin with, so that's why we need great clarity in the line. You received a text from Fastway to say your parcel has been delivered.
Okay, my parcel was delivered early last week. I can't remember whether it was actually Monday or Tuesday, but it was one of those days.
Okay.
When I saw that I had the wrong items, I tried to contact Fastway and I wasn't getting any answer to any phone calls. So I kind of put aside, I was busy doing other things, thinking, assuming that Fastway would come back if there was a mix up somewhere and take the items back. Mm-hmm. So then on Wednesday evening, I got a phone call from a man called Declan.
Okay.
And Declan had got my parcel in a fast way delivered. He had realised that there was a second label underneath his name, and he had peeled it off and found my name, address, and phone number.
Let's listen to Declan.
Sounds
this is
great.
Stay with us, Rosemary. This is Declan, yeah, who got your parcel. Okay. And he discovered your phone number by lifting his label. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay,
yes.
here's Declan.
On Monday the 20th of May, I received a parcel at 14:10. Well, actually, my partner received it from Fastway Deliveries and Fastway Couriers. And my partner put it away because she had an idea of two jerseys we ordered for my son. So anyway, she actually forgot to give it to me that day. And then it was on the Wednesday, I was talking to her on the phone and I said, I hope that package comes soon. She goes, oh, actually, package came the other day. I put it away. So I came home from work on Wednesday, the 22nd. I opened the package and there was no jerseys. It was just a colouredy coat for a lady. So I was looking at the package and I noticed it had another sticker under my name. So I peeled back carefully my sticker to reveal another name of a girl in Santry called Rose, and her phone number, luckily enough, was on the sticker.
Okay, that was Declan. And Rosemary, that colouredy jacket he spoke about, would that be yours?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Me a WhatsApp photograph of the item, and yes, it is what I ordered. So I said, that's funny. Because I said, I received a package and it's electrical
stuff, okay.
My jersey, that it would have been just between the two of us. So we still had the hope of his jerseys, because I then had to work on trying to get the label off the package that came. And with some difficulty, I got it off. And I found another name for Paul in Lucan.
Oh, good luck.
And I got his phone number, So he wasn't picking up on the phone at the start and that. So I contacted Declan again and I said to him, look, I've got this name and number in Luke and sending him a WhatsApp photograph. And that, and I said, we'll try to persist in phoning to see if we could get Paul. So as it turned out, Declan made contact with Paul. He happened to be up in that area. And he left a message with a neighbour of Paul's.
But when hang on, Rosemary, when Declan met Paul, did Declan get his jerseys? And
no, he didn't meet Paul to begin with. Paul wasn't at home when he called, so he left word with the neighbour. And the neighbour got Paul to phone him, which Paul did.
Okay.
And then Paul phoned me after that.
Yes.
And then he lifted the label on his package.
Yes.
And it led on to a lady called Elena. And
Elena.
I do believe she was Elena. So it's I do believe she lived somewhere in Lucan as well. Now, Paul had got earrings and jewellery, which he hadn't ordered. He had ordered the electrical stuff that I got. So it was like the plot was deepening the whole time.
If you are at home in your kitchen and you have a whiteboard, will you clear the whiteboard and write down the following names to try and keep track? So
it was so Declan, funny. Like we were laughing at.
I know Declan. Show. Declan got your coloured jacket.
Yeah.
Paul got just come back. I'm trying to help people who are doing the diagram at home. Paul got Elena's jewellery.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I had Paul's electrical stuff.
You got now, Paul's electrical. Oh, sorry. You. Oh, so that's you got Paul's electrical stuff.
Yeah. So then, when Paul peeled the label, it led on to Elena. When Elena peeled the label,
yes,
it led on to a lady called Emmy. And then Emmy had got the wrong order, and I'm not quite sure if the order that Elena got was Emmy's, but when Emmy peeled the label, she got the name of a man called Michael.
Okay,
in
now hang on. Well, look, can we go back to? I have Rosemary Force, then we play Declan's tape, then back to go back to you. Have I another tape of Declan? Have I another tape of Declan? Here's Declan again to fill in the story.
We have
Declan. Yeah. Declan.
Just for luck, the next day I was delivering. I had a delivery in Lucan, which I delivered. And then I just put in the error code into my phone from the guy, Paul, in Lucan. He was only 5 minutes away. So I said, Vic, I'll chance my arm. And I went to his house to see, did he have my package? Because Rosemary had his, I had Rosemary's, and I presume maybe Paul had mine. Anyway, I called to Paul's and he wasn't there. So I called into Paul's neighbour and I explained to her, a girl called Sarah, she was lovely. And I explained the story to her, and she had the same number as I had for Paul, so she reckoned Paul had a new number. So she took my details, and she said she'd say it to Paul later to give me a ring. Paul did ring me that evening and explained that he did get a package, but it wasn't the two jerseys I was looking for. It was actually clothes for a lady. So Paul then pulled back the sticker on his package to reveal another lady's name called Elena, and her number was on it. So Paul WhatsApped me the information, so I contacted Elena.
Yeah, okay. I'm just reading a bit of Franz Kafka at the minute just to try for a bit of light relief because I'm completely lost. Okay, next. Okay. Next, Rosemary, you mentioned Elena.
So Elena was in the scene then, and Elena peeled off the label as far as like the rest of us, and she got Emmy.
Okay, okay. Here's Elena. Elena.
Right.
Come in, Elena. Come on, Elena. Tape. It's Emmy. Sorry.
Dresses, right?
Is Emmy or
Elena? But when I opened it, it was there was no dresses inside the package, and I realized that I had been sent someone else's package. So I got on too fast when I was trying to resolve this, but there weren't being any help. And that's when I realized that my label had been stuck on top of another label with, you know, the details of the person who this package was meant to go to. So I was able to contact Michael, that's the guy who was supposed to receive the package I had, by the phone number that was listed there on the label. And I contacted him and I was like, you know, I have your package. Do you by any chance have mine? Because at this point, I thought it was just a simple mix-up between me and him. And, you know, he had received my package and I had received his. But obviously, that wasn't the case. He hadn't received my package. And it wasn't until Declan called me 2 days ago that I realized that this was a bigger, you know, thing that I had first, like, initially thought.
I'm just doing a Rubik's Cube here backwards for a bit of light relief. Rosemary, I'm completely lost. Rosemary, how many people are involved in this past the parcel mix-up at this stage? Six.
Right? Six at this point.
Okay.
But Michael, seemingly when Emmy contacted Michael,
yeah,
Michael has not got any delivery.
Who's Michael?
Michael is in Longford. He came.
In Longford.
His parcel was actually delivered to Emmy. And Emmy peeled off the label and got Michael's name, and she contacted him. And I, as far as I know, she's been contacting Fastway.
Yeah, okay.
To collect so the what package did, what, and deliver it so what to did the right em, person.
What did Emmy get that was Michael's? That was rightfully Michael's?
I'm not sure what she got.
Okay.
Like, it was like what Christmas. Was it, what we were was Emmy? Surprises.
What did Emmy order?
It's clothing, as far as I know.
Okay, but where's Emmy's clothing?
Well, I think Elena might have had that.
Elena, okay.
Yeah.
And what did Elena order?
I think, as far as I know,
jewelry.
Elena, Paul got the jewellery that Elena had ordered.
Okay, Paul.
And I had Paul's electrical stuff. So the thing that's still missing is the jerseys.
That's what I'm saying. Where are Declan's jerseys?
Well, Mike, as far as I found out from trying to contact people and that, Michael seemingly got no delivery.
Ah.
So that means that the jerseys are the things that's missing out of us, our six. We're all mixed up with each other's stuff, but there's only five parcels that were delivered when there's six people.
Okay.
And it's Declan's jerseys.
Yeah.
That are missing, as far as I can make out from it all. It's very much a roundabout puzzling situation. And further to that, I know Declan contacted a lady in Fastway, and he didn't get any satisfaction. He also gave me that number, and I phoned it, and I got no answer at all. Then I tried live chat. I went on the website to find her, you know, and I went in on live chat. And the minute I mentioned what the problem was about getting the wrong deliveries, I was told they were going to put me through to a secure line, and I was to pay €1, which would be refundable, and they would deal with me. So I just cut it off at that. I was not giving my credit card to anybody. To sort out their mistakes. Like,
we've asked Fastway to come on, because they're one of the biggest delivery companies in the country. Fastway is aware of a recent... They wouldn't come on. Fastway is aware... They asked us to read out the statement. Fastway is aware of a recent situation regarding the mislabeling of parcels. Fastway actively collaborated with its client, who acknowledged a labelling error in their supply chain. The client worked diligently with support from Fastway to resolve the issue, and we are advised that this has now been resolved. We want to clarify...
I have not heard from them.
We want to clarify that Fastway does not engage in the over-labelling of parcels. The presence of our name on the delivery labels is due to our role as the final mile carrier. We hope this provides clarity. Where's Declan's jerseys?
I don't know. And I'd appeal to anybody out there.
Okay, but Declan's jersey, your colour D jacket, the electrical goods, which I think were Elena's, the clothes that Michael got, and the jewellery that Paul got that were Emmys or whatever. Are they all from the same supplier? Forget about the courier. Are they from the same company?
No.
You see, my understanding of what Fast, this would probably be great to have them on. Fastway is aware of a recent situation regarding the labelling brand. Fastway actively collaborate with its client. So they say it's the company that is supplying. It doesn't say clients. Oh. It's the company that's supplying the electrical goods, the colour D jacket, the jerseys that never arrived. The jewellery that Paul is wearing and out and about Lucan, because that's belonged to Emmy. The dress that Michael got, it belonged to Elena. They said it. The fast way you're saying.
Declan is wearing my coating. I know he is. We actually had a joke about that, Joe. I told him to take the wear out of it. Could quite a dash, but that's the early stages.
Do you think he's wearing the colour? Do you think he's wearing the colour jacket as a little?
I won't tell you what he said. He can do that himself. But anyway,
well, you see, a bit of a laugh between us. See, the fast way you're saying it's to do with the company where you're buying all this stuff from.
Yeah, well, I was with Asley Co.UK. It was where it was originally ordered from, right?
And do they sell electrical goods?
They sell a range of clothing. They sell some.
No, do they sell do they sell electrical goods?
I haven't seen that on their website now. I couldn't swear they don't, but I haven't seen it because I wasn't searching for it either.
The last time I was in Zara, I couldn't find a transistor radio. You know what I mean? I don't think.
Could you not?
Well, I don't think fashion shops sell electrical goods unless it's a GHD or whatever.
Yeah, but just it's sad that the jerseys are gone. Like, my coat didn't come, by the way. Declan put that back in the depot.
Depot
with Fastway with the right address, but it's a week later now and it still has not been delivered here. Okay.
And when is it?
I would like to see them jerseys turn up for them kids.
And when is the team due to play again? I wonder, in their new jerseys.
Okay. It's not right.
Now, you know, I was reading this in the USA. It's a big phenomenon now. There's actually a word for it. That if you if you buy stuff online, it is, and you say, I'm not happy. Okay. Now, I know it varies given the value of the product. That a lot of companies will say, well, keep it. Okay, because it's not worth their while to reprocess it. A number of other companies apparently have now joined this scheme where if you get something below a certain value, you say, I don't want it, they'll say, send it back to the warehouse in Clonshock, in Clonshock. And that's a company that specifically deals with all these returns. And they don't give them back to the company because the company don't want them because to get them back into the system in their warehouse, the computer system, is just a nightmare. Right. So these companies have set themselves up. They get the give backs and they organise to sell them or whatever they sell them. So this generation game is not finished.
Yeah. Well, actually, the guy I was dealing with has been in contact with me a few times, like, because I told him that I didn't get it, like, and then I told him that it was delivered to Declan and I still hadn't got it, and he said to me that I can put in a claim against Fastways for not delivering the right parcel, that the proof is in all the double labelling that has gone on. You know, and the proof is there that they actually sent the item, so that's where it stands at this point in time. So I suppose it applies to all of us that's caught up in this. We could actually make a claim against Fastway if we wanted.
Okay. But
Joe, it's just so disappointing for that man to have ordered jerseys for his kids and not get them. I think, you know, I would put up with it doing without the coat. I would.
Okay.
It's not that big a deal.
Okay, we see what we get in. Okay, thanks indeed for putting that jigsaw together. Well, it's nearly together with the piece all over the place. Noelle Hayes. Noelle, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I mentioned this photograph earlier on, and it's on the front page of the Irish Times, and a parent of a young girl raised it with us. You are the aunt of one of those children.
That's right. One of the girls in the photo is my niece.
And what is the family's reaction to the photograph being published?
We're very upset, Joe, because I just think it's very distasteful. And I just think, you know, this was such a devastating, thing to wake up to this morning. These girls have been fundraising for weeks to get to Dublin to stay the night. They were really excited. To lose the match is one thing, and we all, you know, they have to learn to win, to lose, that's fine.
Yeah.
But to wake up this morning in all of the, you know, their distress and devastation, to find themselves, you know, on the front of a national newspaper, I just think that's it's really shame on Irish Times for doing that. In relation to consent, I'm sure that no parent consented to have their children in the state that they were in to be photographed, to be put up on a national newspaper. If you look at the picture, you have one child who has her jersey above her head that's clearly saying, leave me alone, I need privacy, yeah, I am upset.
She's, and you look her at face, another girl her face is covered, yeah.
Her face is covered, and another girl has her hands up to her face, covering her face. So they're upset, they're distressed, and I can't understand in what world it's correct to put this on a national newspaper. I showed the picture just there a little while ago to my teenage daughter, and she looked at me blankly and said, why? And that's exactly how the family are feeling.
Did your sister, who's the mother of one of these four beautiful children, did she give permission specifically for this form?
I'm not going to comment on that, Joe, because I don't know the form. Okay. I haven't read the form. I'm sure that, you know, that the school did everything they needed to do for consent. Yeah. But there's no way these kids under the age of 13 consented to that picture. And there's no way any parent would consent to that picture, you know, being put out there. Why did it have to be, a picture of under 13 girls who are upset and distressed that are on the front page? Why could it not be the winning team that are celebrating? Yeah. So I really can't understand the Irish Times editors, photographers, writers.
Well,
I don't understand why they would have thought this was okay.
Now, I don't know whether you heard earlier, Noel, that and another parent sent us in when she heard this story and she saw the photograph. She went through, so to speak, the small print of what every parent now signs at the beginning of the year, and we think we're signing it for to allow photographs of the communion class or whatever the chess class or the basketball team to go up on the school website. But this is what's been pointed out to us. And Sportsfile, who are the very reputable company who took the photograph, they say they assume permission because it is in a particular competition, and the parents sign these things to actually participate. But this is the paragraph. And now I don't know if it's in the school in question, which I'm not going to name. But I suspect it might be, because it seems a form that everyone is using. On some occasions, e.g. a child winning a competition or a team playing in a tournament or a photograph of junior infants, the local national newspaper may wish to publish a photograph with the accompanying children's names. It didn't arise here. I don't even know if the children were asked their names. By signing the consent form, which is this consent form at the beginning of the year, related to this, the parents stroke guardians of the child are giving permission for their child to be named, I presume if you're named, you're photographed, in this scenario. Now, it specifically says a child winning a competition, but this is the exact opposite.
I agree. I don't think any parent would consent to that picture being posted on a national newspaper. So I really think that Sportsfile really need to look at this. And I really do feel, Joe, that a public apology is required. If they thought it fit to put this picture on the front of a national newspaper, well, then they should put an apology on the front of the newspaper tomorrow. For these poor kids, they're all under the age of 13. These are children. And they are very clearly, by their stance in the photograph, are stating, I need privacy, I want privacy, I am upset, I am distressed. And yet, Sportsfile and their people think it's okay to put this, you know, for everyone to see.
Well, you see, Sportsfile, in fairness, would supply a load of photographs to a newspaper. And a
so
newspaper.
It's the Irish Times.
Well, I presume it's the paper decides what photographs, especially what photographs to put on the front page.
I'd love to know why they thought this was appropriate, Joe.
It says penalty shootout, United in defeat. I won't name the school again. And I didn't name it at all. I'm not going to. Players from show their heartache after losing a playoff match on penalties during the FAI Primary Fives final at the Aviva yesterday. What about that thing? Well, they're showing their heartache, and that's part of team sports. And
well, I mean, that's okay, but these kids are very clearly stating, I need privacy, I'm distressed, you know, leave me alone. And yet they end up on a newspaper. Yeah. So, as a family, we're quite upset and upset for the children. And indeed, this is going to leave a bad taste in their mouths for, you know, the match they get over. But this has really hurt and upset a lot of people.
Now, I'm sure the Irish Times would argue when we've asked them to come on that, well, it's online. That's the other thing. It is online as well. I'm thinking of the print edition. Maybe the children wouldn't see the print edition of the Irish Times. They'd see, if you go into a shop, you'll see it's on the front page. It's above the fold. Mm-hmm. So it would be the photograph that jumps out at you. But maybe they as far as you know, Noel, I know it's your sister that's a mother, one of the children. That's mm-hmm. all you can speak. But as far as you know, did the children see the photograph?
Yes.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So it's very upsetting. So I do think Irish Times have a job to do now to try and apologise and, you know, explain where they're coming from, because I'd love to know.
And you know, I don't expect you to speak for the other children, but do you know?
I really can't.
Okay,
no,
okay.
I can't speak for anybody. Yeah. Okay, Joe.
Okay, Noel, I really appreciate that.
Call.
And thank you. I think it's a very, very brave call to make. And thank you for saying it. And those children are absolutely brilliant. Get to that level is absolutely brilliant. And they should be all proud of themselves and proud of each other. Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is the text number. Back after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Happened onto the Irish Times about that photograph and why they decided to put it on the front of the newspaper. And as you heard, at least one of the four families involved are deeply upset by the publication of the photograph. Donica Murphy. Donica, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. How's it going?
We found a Good Samaritan on... Well, we found the child who was rescued by Noel on Monday. He rescued a child 40 years ago. We wondered how he got on in life. The child was only six at the time. And the child came on and said, I get on fine. And himself and Noel have been in touch and talking
great
to each
stuff.
Other since. Okay. What's your search endeavour?
Yeah. Well, Joe, went with a crowd of 19 other golfers to Spain on Easter weekend, a Sunday, Monday. And four of the lads went out on the Sunday and 16 of us went out on the Monday.
Okay.
And one of the lads that travelled on the Sunday, a gentleman called Tony Bourne, who happened to be my roommate for the week, arrived at the boarding gate to find that he had no passport or... he lost his wallet, mislaid his wallet.
Okay.
So, obviously, he couldn't get on the plane. Went back to Lost and Found. They had no good news for him. So, he had to come, had to ring home, get somebody to collect him, and head home. And on the way to home, Joe, he got a call from his sister about 10 minutes from home to say that a passport and wallet had been found.
Oh, great.
So, which was great, yeah. So he went back to the Lost and Found, and the lady in the Lost and Found, when she spotted him, she said, "Ah, I have what you're looking for."
Okay.
So Tony went off then to rearrange another flight, because obviously he missed out on the first flight. So he got there on Sunday night, and so on Monday, the rest of us, the 16 of us, headed out on for the week of golf.
Yeah.
And we had 4 days golf and a bit of crack and the usual bit of crack and sport after the golf. So everything was going fine until Friday, our last day of golf, and we were playing down in the place called Santana. And today, I don't remember, Joe. I'm told that I rang my wife. I don't remember that call. She said I didn't sound great and that I should go and see a pharmacist because I was coughing and spluttering on the phone to her. And then, on the way back to the hotel in the bus, the bus had to stop because I wasn't feeling good and I had to get off the bus for about 10 or 15 minutes, got sick and then got back on the bus again. Looking at something that I don't remember.
Okay.
Arrived back at the hotel, and this morning Tony told me, by the way, you forgot something else. I went off to the pharmacist to get, obviously, the medication that I was supposed to get to look after me cough. And then I went, headed back to the hotel, up to the room, lay down on the bed. Luckily, Tony, who almost missed his flight and was my roommate for the week, came out of the bathroom to spot me in. I was in, kind of, I was having a bit of a seizure.
Okay.
And the next thing, I went, I flatlined.
You flatlined?
So, yeah, I, you know, my heart stopped.
Yeah.
I was having a heart attack.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So, there was Tony, obviously, panicked. He started CPR on me. Rang one of the lads, one of our gang. He came running down into the room. Both of them were working on CPR while another chap ran down to reception to get the defibrillator.
Yeah.
So, while obviously in reception they were ringing the local hospital and things like
ambulance,
that.
Ambulance.
And Joe, I have to say, like, the responder unit was there within 7 minutes.
Okay, but this is the serendipity of life. The key is that your roommate, who thankfully was there, there was every possibility he would not have been there unless this good Samaritan handed in his passport and wallet at Dublin Airport, because Tony would not have made the trip. Now, let me go to Tony. Tony, good afternoon. Are you there? Tony Bourne. Okay. You come to the, all the lads are going away on a trip. Your roommate is Donegal Murphy. What happened when you arrived at, when did you realise your wallet and your passport had gone missing?
Well, you just literally walked up to the gate to board the plane.
Okay.
And I showed my boarding pass from my phone.
Yeah.
And the guy just said, passport, please. And put my hand in my pocket and it was gone.
There it was, gone.
Yeah.
And your wallet was gone.
Yeah, the two of them, yeah.
So what happened next? What about getting your baggage off the plane?
No, I ended up, I had to go back to the Ryanair desk.
Okay.
And they had already taken my golf bag off the plane.
Okay.
So the girl brought me down to the luggage area and gave it back to me.
Fair play.
But I had asked security, was there any sign of anything, and they said no, nothing at all.
Okay.
So I rang my brother-in-law, and he came up and collected me.
Okay, and your brother-in-law lives where? Give me the journey time.
Roundwood and Wicklow.
Round the County Wicklow, okay. So you now said to yourself, this is bad luck, I'm not going.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay. So you're now in the car, your brother your brother-in-law arrives, you load your golf clothes back into the car, and you turn around heading for Roundwood, in Wicklow. Meanwhile, Dunica, your roommate, and your other buddies, they're gone. They're on the Ryanair flight, and that's gone.
Well, yeah, Dunica was gone.
I didn't go out till the Monday.
Okay.
Just Tony went on the Sunday.
Okay, but the key is if Tony hadn't been there. So, Tony,
you're
now driving home. To convince yourself that you're not going to get on this trip because you've lost your passport and your money. The money in this sense is not relevant. The passport is critical because you don't go anywhere without your passport, and the chance of getting a new passport within a few days is very, very, very low. Okay, you're driving home to Wicklow. What happened?
My sister rang me and she just said she was on to Lost and Found
done.
Dublin Airport.
Yeah.
And there's a passport being handed in just with the name Byrne on it. And they didn't mention the walls or anything, that was it.
Okay.
So the brother-in-law said, shall we go back to my chance and see?
Good lads. Yes, great. So you turned the car around.
And back up to the airport.
Okay, where were you at this stage? Were you near Roundwood? Were you in Loughlin?
I was about 15 minutes from the airport.
Brilliant. So did a U-turn, hopefully not in the M50, and headed back to the airport and up to Lost and Found, and there it was.
Yeah, just I walked in and there was a few in it, but this lady behind the bar, or behind the desk, just said, oh, I have something for you.
Right.
And she had my passport and my wallet with €650 in it.
Bingo
was right, yeah.
So you said, I'm going.
I had to get back up to Ryanair, probably.
Yeah.
And look, it was the same girl who originally gave me the golf clubs.
Brilliant.
She was behind the desk. And there's a flight out that evening at 5 o'clock, which was two spaces available on.
Okay.
So, it all
out you went. So you were already out warming up the room for Donegal's arrival. Little did you know what was you know what was going to befall the two of you as roommates. So you're if 1 hour, 2 hours earlier, you were convinced, passport gone, having a hope of getting out to the lads. You're now in the hotel. Donegal arrives. He's over the moon to see you. You hug each other in a manly way, and
speak for yourself, Joe.
and Tony, when did you realise your roommate, who without your passport would have been a soulmate, he would have been on his own in the room, when did you spot that Donegal was in difficulty?
Well, I spotted him on the bus, first of all, on the way home from the last day golf.
Okay.
He had a big grain face and that, so we stopped and he got sick. But we were back then and up to the hotel room and went and had my shower, and he's on the phone actually to somebody sitting on the edge of the bed, and he just said to me, "This is, I have to go, I don't feel well."
Okay.
So he hung up and he just lay back in the bed, and I was about to head out.
Yeah.
And he took a kind of a fit and just stopped breathing.
Wow.
So I just done a few chest compressions and stuff. Rang Casey, one of the lads.
Good man.
They were in a minute, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And I just kept working on him and working on him. And then about 10 minutes later, the two girls arrived up with the defibrillator.
Magic.
And eventually got it hooked up to him. And, you know, at this stage, it was like being in a film.
Yeah.
You know, like they're shouting clear, so you stand back and take him in the shock.
Yeah.
And they just carry on again then, and that happened 3 times.
Wow. They pressed that electric shock button 3 times.
3 times had to do to him, yeah.
That's
they said he went 3 times in the room.
Wow. Isn't that magnificent? But only for you were in that room. Nobody would have known that Donegal was on the floor or Donegal had taken the heart attack. Isn't that it?
Yeah, it was just good timing, lucky timing.
Well, you see, the good timing, surely, and I know you agree with me, is the good Samaritan who found your passport and wallet.
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay. During this ad break, I'm taking out my little magnifying glass and we will go in search of the Good Samaritan.
Lovely, yeah.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Graham McQueen, Dublin Airport Press Office. Graham, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
I was going to say Graham is a friend of the programme, but I hate that phrase. I hate that phrase. Because you can't be a friend of an... and there's no friends of Liveline, really. They're targets in big companies invariably when people come on. But in this case, it's a... Can you help us find out how the wallet and the passport was found? Because if that passport had not been found, Tony Bourne would not have been in the room when Donegal Murphy had a cardiac. And God knows what would have happened, but he had to be defibbed, as well as Tony and his other buddy doing CPR on Donegal until the defib arrived. He had to be bounced 3 times before we got him back. Graham, can you help?
Yeah, it's an incredible story, Joe. I was quite taken aback when your researcher was telling me about it this morning. So we've started to have a look into that. We certainly identified the member of the airport police team in our lost and found department who was able to help Tony. That's Norma. I did ask Norma if she'd like to come on, but a lot of that team, they see that as their job. Incredibly humble.
Norma was on the desk, was she?
Norma was on the desk that
lost
day.
Lost and found,
She was the one who took it in and then got it back to Tony on the day.
She's the one that made the phone call and Tony turned around, brother to the sister. Sister rang Tony. Tony turned around and your Norma said, "I have some good news for you," when he arrived at the desk and handed him back his passport and wallet. Now, do we know how it got to that desk?
Yeah, so what we know so far is that the wallet and the passport were found in a bar in Terminal 1 down the Ryanair gates called Tap and Brew.
Ah, no,
so they,
no.
they would have been picked up by a staff member.
Okay.
We do have the feelers out to try and find out who that staff member was. Okay. And we're looking to see if we've any CCTV. But I don't know the name yet, but we'll leave no stone unturned, Joe, to see if we can find the individual.
So it's down to Tap and Brew, is it run by DAA or is it a franchise or whatever? In other words, is that bar staff, male or female, are they an employee of you or another company? I'm just for my own.
Yeah, they would be an employee of a different company from us. But we have a very close working relationship I'd be confident we will find out who it is.
Okay, I'd love to know who they are because that bar person is an angel for handing it in so quickly. And then Norma realising when she got it, lost and found, she quickly made a phone call. And then Tony was able to turn around. And little did we know, Graham, this is the serendipity of life, as you well know. Little did we know that the difference, the presence of Tony Bourne in Dunica's room would make a couple of days later when Dunica had his cardiac. Dunica, stay with us, Graham. Dunica, when you mentioned earlier that you rang your wife and you said to her, I'm not feeling great. Okay.
No, Joe. I rang my wife. I don't remember Andy the day.
Okay.
On Friday, right? But she did say to me when she was at the end of the bed on Saturday morning in the hospital, you know, you didn't sound great on the phone.
And that's why
you know, Tony said when I got off the bus that I made a beeline for the local pharmacy. But again, I've no recollection of that, none whatsoever.
Okay. And were you conscious? I know you were, sorry, were you aware that, because I know you're, what age was your dad when he passed?
Same age as myself, 67.
And where was he
when? And he died on the golf course as well.
Oh, mother of God.
Yeah. But listen, my mum and dad were looking down on me on the day.
Somebody was looking, and Norma was looking down at you, and the bar staff,
and Tony, Tap
and Brew, and then Tony Bourne, the fact that he was beside you. Yeah.
And the rest of the gang then as well. And then, like, to, you know, make to help things along, one of our gang, Frank Scanlon, speaks fluent Spanish.
Ah.
So he was able to travel in the ambulance with me, along with another colleague, to the hospital. So he was able to fill the ambulance personnel in on what was going on, you know.
Well done. So first of all, okay.
Yeah.
Well done to the Ryanair staff at the gate who helped Tony get his gear back off quickly. And then when he came back later to book a ticket were really helpful. So well done to the Ryanair staff. The sliding doors moment here is that bar staff. Well, there's two sliding doors moment, really. The bar staff who picked up the wallet and passport and immediately got it to Lost and Found. And then it didn't sit in Lost and Found, but Norma in Lost and Found immediately rang the number that was in the wallet or whatever. And that was another sliding door moment. And that meant that you got on the trip. It meant you got into Dunica's room, so to speak. You were there when he needed help, serious help, and you got the help. It's incredible. Incredible.
Yeah.
It's a good news story, isn't it, Graham?
It is, and look, it's a nice one for the team to hear back as well, because they handle probably hundreds of items on some days, lots of keys, lots of wallets, lots of rings, wedding rings, engagement rings, things like that. And I think we get about 60% of those items back to the people who lost them. Some people don't come near us. They just accept that it's lost and maybe don't know that Lost and Found is there. But we work incredibly hard. The team work hard to get it back to people. And we even had one occasion there recently where Selena from our airport police, who is an avid sailor, got a lost jacket back to a passenger. And that sounds pretty normal, but the jacket went to the person who lives on Lambie Island off the coast of Dublin. So that was the length that they went to get that jacket back to the person. So we try and reunite where we can get lost items back.
And Graham, I should say to you as well, because the last time you were on, it was about people who had various medical procedures and medical equipment with them. And they were upset. Not all of them, obviously, but some of them were upset about the just the protocols that were being operated. Now, I can also tell you that since then, Graham, through the calls I'm looking at here, it's 10 days ago now, and my own people who come up to me, I know that the situation has improved dramatically in Dublin Airport. Is that fair to say? In terms of,
yeah, well, I know it wasn't
a crisis, but I'm told that the people are, and I know people are always treating the security staff are brilliant and good natured and all this carry on, but so that's an update for you that the feedback has been very positive. What's happening on the scanners? Have we any more scanners? New, do you know the scanners where I don't have to strip naked?
Yeah, we're getting closer to that, Joe. Where T2 is pretty much is almost done at this stage. It'll be fully done by October. Terminal 1 is about half done. It's an older building, so we need a bit of infrastructure work to go on there. So we've actually paused the installations for summer. We're going to be really, really busy the next 3 months. You know, we've got about 10 million passengers going through the next 3 months. So we want to get everybody through and onto their holidays. So we'll resume in T1 in September, and that'll be fully finished by autumn next year. So we're getting there, and some passengers, around half of passengers going through this summer, will use those new scanners, and they're great. As you say, you can leave your stuff in your bag these days. Okay. But for the moment, we need to prepare for security.
And why we've been talking, and you can allocate these, or you can hopefully, Graham, I'm going to land them on you. Paul Weller is coming to Dublin soon. The organisers want to give a pair of tickets to Norma. Don't ask me Norma's second name, but Norma, you know who Norma is. Foxford Rugs. They're great. They want to give a beautiful throw to Norma as well for her heroics. When we find the bar staff in Tap and Brew, they're going to Snow Patrol, and they have a hamper from Inish, which is the Wicklow fragrance. So that's appropriate given the day that's in it. As we say, we don't know whether the bar staff is male or female, but they were critical to the sliding doors moment. And Tony Bourne, the hero. Tony?
Yeah.
Cover your ears there, Dunica, because you're getting all you got was your life. Tony Bourne, you're getting two tickets to Mrs. Brown's Boys, who's on at Christmas in the Three Arena, the formerly the Pint Depot.
Oh,
and you also have a family ticket and a round of golf, Tony. You could bring Dunica to Powers Court Estate and Gardens in County Wicklow as well, down the road from you. Okay.
Brilliant.
So well
super
done.
Job. Thank you.
Well done, Dunica. Well done, Tony. Well done, Graham. Well done, Norma. Well done, the Ryanair staff. Well done. Well done. Who am I missing? Oh, the bar staff in Tap and Brew, who handed up, and the DAA, obviously, for coordinating all of that. Thanks, Graham.
Can I just have...
Yes.
Sorry, Joe. Can I just say one final word on this?
Yeah.
I'd just like to say a sincere thank you to all the gang that travelled with us.
Oh, of course.
I mean,
yeah, your mates. Yeah.
They were absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I mean, the communications with Marita, my wife, and my kids was absolutely phenomenal.
Fantastic.
And then the support I had from Marita and the kids over the last number of weeks. Just like to say to them, listen, I love you very much, and thank you for getting me here.
And Dunica, will you stick with that gang of buddies, please?
Because in that
gang of buddies, you have someone that can do two of them that can do CPR, one of them that speaks Spanish, obviously one of them that remains very sensible. And I know I go away, as most lads do, at our age, I don't play golf, but we go away once, twice a year with a gang of buddies, and between them, they can hardly speak English, let alone speak Spanish. Between them, you wouldn't send them to the chemist for a bottle of Calpol, let alone do CPR. So you're very lucky, Dunica.
Absolutely,
with
Joe.
Your buddies. Thrilled. And what did WP8 say? If you want to know somebody, you know them by their friends. So well done. Thanks, Graham. Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Dunica. Joe
thanks,
at RTE.ie. Good morning.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
It was now 3 months since we did the incredible story of Margaret Sweeney, the weather Observer in Balmullet and County Mayo. It was her nephew who contacted us. We were talking about something completely different. He brought Margaret Sweeney, who changed the course of world history by delaying D-Day by a day, because it was her message to Eisenhower's staff that said there was a storm incoming, but it will be gone in 12 hours. And Eisenhower delayed D-Day by a single 24 hours, which made all the difference in terms of the landings, even though they were full of horror, as we all know. But what they led to was not the end of the Second World War. But the 80th anniversary of D-Day is next week. And there are many Irish connections which have not really been celebrated for various reasons over the years. And Thomas O'Halloran, I mentioned the O'Halloran brothers earlier on in the week. And Thomas O'Halloran, Thomas, what is your, you were the great grandnephew of the five brothers.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, absolutely. I would be Jeremiah and William's great nephew.
And then there's Martin. Isn't there Michael?
Martin, Michael Senior, John.
Yeah, John, of course. Yeah, and the how did the five of them end up in fighting in the Second World War? Who enlisted first?
Well, initially it started off in World War One, where Michael and his five sons signed up. They were in the English Army, and then when World War Two broke out, Michael, their dad, attempted to sign up again, but he was refused on the grounds of his age.
Okay.
So Jeremiah, and that they joined in America, in New York. They were over there working.
Okay.
And the other three joined up to the Royal Munster Fusiliers. They were considered experienced soldiers.
So, and Michael, the father, tried to sign up.
It was Michael Jr. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Michael Jr. And five of his sons signed up.
Yes, yeah.
So and where did they all serve?
Two served in the US Army, and three served in the Royal Munster Fusiliers. Two lads who joined up in New York. They were there for D-Day.
So they were based in America. And by the way, I know one of them, Patrick, who'll be, again, another relation.
Another great uncle, yeah.
He was wounded in the First World War.
He was, they were all in the First World War. Patrick was the only one not to come home. He succumbed to his wounds in World War One, and he's buried in northern France now, so he is.
And he's buried in the Hazelbrook Communal Cemetery in northern France. So Jeremiah, after the First World War, Jeremiah and Martin moved to New York. And then with the outbreak of the Second World War, all the O'Hallorans again answered the call. But this time, as you said, the father, Michael, who had served previously, he was too old to serve. So we now have five sons with the Allies.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, and did they all participate in D-Day?
No, just Jeremiah and his brother, the two brothers who joined up with the US Army.
Okay, and did all the O'Halloran brothers survive the Second World War?
Yes, yeah, they did indeed.
That's incredible, isn't it? In itself.
Unbelievable. I can only imagine what they had to go through to survive that.
And where did the five lads end up after the Second World War, having fought, like so many Irishmen, who were often reviled here for joining the Allies? But anyway, they were seen up until quite recently as anyone who left the Irish Army to join the Allies, to go to Belfast, was seen as a deserter, believe it or not, up to relatively recently. But what happened to five lads after the Second World War?
Well, Jeremiah and Martin, they settled in America. Jeremiah actually stayed in the American Army.
Okay.
And he served in Korea as well.
Wow.
And the other three brothers, they came back to Enniskillen and lived out their lives here.
And another caller said, were they also known as the Hollerans? I know you're saying O'Halloran. Were they also known as the Hollerans?
Yes, I think from what we believe, that had to do with when they were being signed up. The O before O'Halloran, or the O before Halloran, wasn't, it wasn't prevalent, or it wasn't used by in England or in America. So it kind of got, the O got knocked off, but it's always been O'Halloran.
That's an incredible connection, incredible. And where by the way, where the O'Hallorans, what part of the country are they from?
Predominantly in West Clare, in Ennis, we're in Ennisdiamond, County Clare. So yeah.
Okay. And I know they all survived, but is there the incredible situation? I mean, movies have been made from less about the Second World War, where five brothers were with the Allies during the Second World War. Are they commemorated anywhere in the area?
Yes. My uncle, Gus, who, God rest him, who would have done a lot of research and a book on this, he was one of the founding members of the Historical Society. And we outside our local graveyard, we have a placard and a little monument just to commemorate.
Oh, well done.
The and family and all the families who have served.
Isn't that fantastic? Fantastic. Stay there. This is Thomas O'Halloran. Thomas is in Ennistime. Let me go to David Duffy. You well know him of Duffy's Circus, but he's his passion in life, apart from running a circus, so to speak, is D-Day and everything associated with it. David, good afternoon.
Hi, afternoon, Joe.
Are there many? That's an incredible story. The O'Hallorans.
Amazing story, yeah. Love listening to it.
And are there other Irish stories connected with D-Day?
I've just actually started researching it over the last while because I thought it was a story that was kind of untapped. And like there was a few stories. I mean, there was one of a private Francis McGuinness from Drogheda who landed on Gold Beach, and then he fought all the way through France and ended up actually marrying a German woman. So, as we said, in the story, he was kind of doubly lambasted because both for the fact that he went off to join the British Army, and then secondly, obviously, that he married a German because, you could actually be shot, like, for fraternizing with the enemy.
Wow.
There was, he was a Tipperary-born man, Lieutenant General Ian Harris, and he was actually the most senior Irish soldier on D-Day. And then there's the actor Richard Todd, who I don't know what many of your listeners know about. He became like a very, very famous film star. And the two biggest sort of war movies he played, played Guy Gibson in The Dam Busters.
Okay.
And then he played Major John Howard, who was the leader of the infantry glider force that took the bridge at Bennerville, which is now called Pegasus Bridge. And the strange story about that is that Richard Todd, who was a lieutenant at the time, he was part of the 7th Battalion Parachute Regiment that actually relieved John Howard on the bridge the next morning. Then in The Longest Day, he played John Howard.
Okay. So somebody, I'll come back to, I thought Richard Todd was English, but we'll come back to his Irish connections in a sec. But you're saying a soldier who participated in D-Day actually starred in the movie about D-Day called The Longest Day.
That's Richard Todd.
Okay, yeah. After the break, we'll do the Richard Todd connection and other Irish connections to D-Day. This is David Duffy and Thomas O'Halloran.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We're talking about D-Day and we're talking to David Duffy, D-Day Duffy, so to speak, about the Irish connections. It's his passion. And Thomas O'Halloran's already spoken about his five relations who were all members of the Allied, were all Allied soldiers in 1944. And David has mentioned Richard Todd, the actor. Where was he born, David?
He was born in Dublin.
Yeah.
And it is said that he was actually the first. He was the first Irish man to land on French soil on D-Day. He parachuted in on that the early hours of that morning on 6th of June.
And his family, what did they do in here in Dublin?
That's an answer or a question I don't know the answer to, Joe.
But he became did he ever talk about his action in the Second World War?
Oh yes, I mean in the books about it, like his life story, it wasn't the reason that he was picked to play Major John Howard in the film The Longest Day, but that's just as I said, like the other famous movie was he played Guy Gibson in The Vambusters.
So Richard Todd from Dublin, born in Dublin, we reckon he was the first Irish man to set foot on occupied French soil on D-Day, 80 years ago next week. Okay, here is, when you mentioned his name to us earlier, we dug out this clip of Richard Todd talking about D-Day.
I landed, I would say, 100 or 2 yards in that direction. Now, all this was an ideal dropping zone for paras. I was trying to get my bearings, looking up at the line of aircraft that was coming in. Looked up to see where the other planes were, saw some of them being knocked down, then realised there was a certain amount of small arms fire. I saw a blur, which I reckoned was a wood, and it was that one there. And my instinct, well, and not only my instinct, but my intention was to get to that as quick as I could. I think it came home to me that mortality was an issue at the time. And I saw chaps around me being killed. I lost friends. I never lost friends before. Difficult. Difficult to epitomise. Why do people have to go on bringing bloodshed and war? Come and look at Normandy. You wouldn't want to do all this all over again.
My tone leading into that is completely wrong. Apologies, because we do forget how horrific, well, not in the world we're living in now, if you've been listening anyway in the last week, the horrors that have been spoken about here and other programmes since October the 7th, including October the 7th, and then the Ukraine, which has gone off the front pages, but the horrors there are legion as well, unfortunately. But Richard Todd there brings home the horror of the second World War, the war to end all wars. Well, that was the First World War.
That was very, very moving, wasn't it, Joe?
Yeah, that's Richard Todd. We reckon the first Irishman, according to David Duffy, set foot on occupied French soil, occupied European soil on D-Day 80 years ago next Thursday. Gary Doyle in Strachan in County Kildare. Gary.
Hi, Joe. How are you? I'm back to you again. Yeah, just to share a story. I went to Normandy last year. My son treated me to a bucket list item, which is to visit the beaches.
Okay.
And so we said we'd do the most important thing on day one. So we did Omaha Beach, where 3,200 American soldiers lost their lives in 2 hours. And absolutely sobering. And it was a grim, sort of dull day. It was quite like the film footage of D-Day. But when we were finished, there was a little hotel just off Omaha Beach, and we said we'd pop in for a coffee and croissant. And when we went in, there was a big gathering there, and there was a really old man sitting in the corner, and I just asked the entourage, I said, who is that? Mm-hmm. And he says, that's Papa Jake Larson. He's 100 years old. He's a veteran of D-Day.
Okay.
And I said, wow. I said, I wonder, could I shake his hand? He says, go up and shake his hand. And went up and shake his hand, told him I was from Ireland. And he says, I knew Ireland. He'd been stationed in the north of Ireland. He said, Gary, freedom isn't free. I always remember what he said to me. And but he was the only guy who got off his boat alive on the day.
Wow.
And the only guy from his battalion still alive. And he's written his own book. It's called I'm the Luckiest Man Alive. I'm the Luckiest Man on Earth, and you can still get it through Amazon or whatever. But he went on to tell us they were told to dig in that night, and he dug in on the beach and said to a guy lying beside him, he said, buddy, can I have a light? Because he had a cigarette there. The guy didn't move, and he shook your man, and his helmet fell off, and the guy's head wasn't there. But he stayed in the foxhole for the night, and he was watching dog fights between Spitfires and Messerschmitts.
Okay.
And he got up at night to relieve himself, go to the loo, and when he came back, a piece of one of the Messerschmitts had fallen into his foxhole and had sliced his rifle in two.
Which would have killed him. I'm over time, Gary, unfortunately, we're interested in hearing about from relatives of, or indeed friends, or indeed hobbyists who know about Irish people like David Duffy, who fought and in the beginning of the end of the Second World War, which was D-Day. On sound, Mark McGrath, research, Richie Byrne, producer, Annette Egan. And Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Revamp your home this May with our fresh new curtain embedding designs. Discover comfort and style for every room.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.